Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
It's freezing in here. It must be summertime. Ladies and gentlemen, first of all, I want to thank the folks in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, for a wonderful Q&A session after the Big Uneasy last night at the Manship, I said Manship, Theater. Great questions, great response, and somebody proved their manship. And this coming week, Friday night, Chicago. I'm talking to you, Chicago. Yeah, at the Music Box, the Big Uneasy, and a Q&A afterwards. I'll do the... I don't have a coin. I'll do the A's, okay? You do the Q's. And last housekeeping matter, a huge LeShow welcome. You know, while Sarah Palin, the only time you'll hear her name mentioned during this broadcast, is touring the United States, LeShow continues to expand its dominance of the great state of Alaska. We welcome aboard KDLG in Dillingham, Alaska, starting to air LeShow this very day. Program director Jason Sear. So I guess the transmitter would be Sears Tower. Thank you so much. Welcome aboard. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the new news of the new F-bomb, foreclosure. Are countrywide mortgage-backed securities really mortgage-backed? Do banks even have the legal right to foreclose on certain homes? These are questions that have been raised on this broadcast. You may have heard the interview with Eve Smith, where she discussed this at some length. This from Fortune magazine. These are just a few of the questions raised since the foreclosure crisis revealed shoddy mortgage servicing practices at many of the big banks. Now, court testimony by a former Countrywide employee added to the intrigue because she confessed that many loans there weren't properly handled, bringing into doubt the validity of Countrywide's securitization process. Bank of America, which owns Countrywide, quickly silenced that discussion with firm denials, but Fortune has now examined dozens of court records that corroborate the employee's testimony. And if Countrywide's mortgage securitization systematically failed, as it appears they did, Bank of America's potential liability to its investors in those securities, so-called, dwarfs its shareholder equity. That is to say, its worth on the market dwarfs it. Bank of Opportunity. Last November, a decision in a New Jersey bankruptcy case brought to light the testimony of Linda DeMartini. Her testimony regarding the shoddy practices at Countrywide, in which the notes were not delivered to the trustee of the security. It's a technical thing. And the notes weren't endorsed. Both of them are required by law. Just law. You know, that's all. Just law. A variety of securities fraud charges could follow if the securitization failed. One investor lawsuit already is based on part on Linda DeMartini's testimony about endorsements and delivery. Investors aren't the only possible pursuers of fraud. New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman is investigating mortgage securitizations by three banks, including Bank of America. He may be serious about it or just angling for his own show on CNN. That's me talking. Now back to Fortune. Bank of America vigorously denied the testimony, insisting that as a member of Countrywide's mortgage servicing department, she didn't know what was happening during securitization. Besides, B of A insisted its policy always was to comply with the contracts involving securities. The endorsement of notes is easy to test, says Fortune. In every foreclosure, the bank must give the court a note or an accurate copy of it. And these notes are either properly endorsed or they're not. To check the testimony, Fortune examined the foreclosures filed in two New York counties, Westchester and the Bronx, between 2006 and 2010. There were 130 cases where the Bank of New York was foreclosing on behalf of a Countrywide mortgage-backed security. In 104 of those cases out of 130, the loan was originally made by Countrywide. None of the 104 Countrywide loans were endorsed. It's like you endorse a check. Endorsed by Countrywide. They included only the original borrower's signature. Two-thirds of the loans made by other banks also lacked bank endorsements. Those are required by law. The other third were endorsed either directly on the note or on a writer accompanying the note. The lack of Countrywide endorsements combined with the bank's representation to the court that these documents are accurate copies of the original notes calls into question the securitization of the loans as well as the bank's right as trustee to foreclose on them. Dwarfs. You can use the word as a verb now, but not as a noun. News of the godly, ladies and gentlemen. After a tumultuous year following the resignation of a Roman Catholic bishop who admitted sexually abusing children. Really? That happened? The church in Belgium bowed to pressure this week and agreed in principle to compensate some of the hundreds who claimed they were also the victims of clerics. Not clerks, clerics. The church had previously promised to engage with those who suffered abuse but had not recognized the need to pay cash money, despite the harrowing testimony of many of the accusers. A report by a commission set up by the church last year said 13 people were believed to have committed suicide as a result of sexual abuse by clerics. In a statement, the Belgian bishops and religious superiors said they were now wanting to, quote, help victims restore their dignity and, according to their needs, provide financial help, unquote. Like it's the victims that need their dignity restored. You see. Yes, it's turvy-topsy. The bishops were responding to a report from the Belgian Parliamentary Commission that called for the creation of a panel to adjudicate compensation claims for those who say they were abused by the clergy. The Bishop of Antwerp, said the precise details of the composition of those panels had not been worked out. Resolving all these questions is impossible, he said. Just the difficult we do immediately, the impossible we just turn over to the church. Hello, welcome to the show.
Here it is.
Yeah, it is indeed.
Son, he thought he was the only one.
From the edge of Lake Pontchartrain in New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of Le Show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. And just because penguins are so hot in Hollywood, this from the Telegraph in London, zookeepers are fooling an abandoned penguin chick into thinking a black industrial glove is its parent. Keepers at Living Coasts in Torquay, Devon, are standing in as the tiny chick's parents after it was abandoned before it had even hatched. Somebody call Jim Carrey. In order to hand rear the chick, don't get excited, keepers are wearing a homemade penguin glove puppet during the feeds to stop it from becoming used to humans. The puppet is made from a black rubber industrial glove decorated with red eyes and yellow plumes to mimic an adult macaroni penguin. This way, contact is kept to a minimum, says exhibit manager. Yes, the chick will hear and see keepers, but it will also see the glove, which has the shape and color of an adult penguin. If it starts hanging around West Hollywood clubs after seeing all that black industrial rubber, don't blame us. She did not say that. Also from the Telegraph, another example of WikiLeaks bringing forth nothing newsworthy, ladies and gentlemen, nothing to see here. Secret cables from the United States Embassy in Beijing have shown there was no bloodshed inside Tiananmen Square when China put down student pro-democracy demonstrations 22 years ago. The cables obtained by WikiLeaks and released by the Daily Telegraph partly confirm the Chinese government's account of the early hours of June 4, 1989. The Chinese government has always insisted soldiers did not massacre demonstrators inside the square. Instead, the cables show the Chinese soldiers opened fire on protesters outside the center of Beijing as they fought their way towards the square from the west of the city. Though three cables were sent from the U.S. Embassy on June 3rd in the hours leading up to the suppression, as diplomats realized the final showdown was nearing. The cables described the 10 to 15,000 helmeted armed troops moving into the city, some of whom were carrying automatic weapons. The army came up an elaborate system of blockades, described in a cable from May 21st, which allowed students to control much of central Beijing. Diplomats observed there were buses turned sideways to form roadblocks, and students vowed the army would not be able to cross. But we doubt it, one cable added. As the troops moved in, cables stated the diplomatic staff were repeatedly warned to stay at home. The situation in the center of the city is very confused, said a cable. From June 3rd, political officers at the Beijing Hotel reported troops are pushing a large crowd east. Inside the square itself, a Chilean diplomat was on hand to give his U.S. counterparts an eyewitness account. He watched the military enter the square, quoting, and did not observe any mass firing of weapons into the crowds, although sporadic gunfire was heard. He said most of the troops which entered the square were actually armed only with anti-riot gear. They were backed up by armed soldiers. The diplomat, who was positioned next to a Red Cross station inside Tiananmen Square, said a line of troops surrounded him and panicked medical staff into fleeing. However, he said there was no mass firing into the crowd of students at the monument. Which is never too late, you might say. And in 2009, James Miles, who was the BBC correspondent in Beijing at the time, admitted he had, quote, conveyed the wrong impression, unquote, and that, quote, there was no massacre on Tiananmen Square. Protesters who were still in the square when the army reached it were allowed to leave after negotiations with martial law troops. There was no Tiananmen Square massacre, but there was a Beijing massacre, unquote, the BBC reporter. The fiercest fighting, in fact, took place at Muxidi. I don't know how to pronounce Chinese. You know that. Around 3 miles west of the square where thousands of people had gathered spontaneously on the night of June 3rd to halt the advance of the army. So the media just got it wrong. That never happens in this country. From The Age in Australia, Iraqi interpreters who put their lives on the line while working alongside Australian troops say they have been treated as traitors and rejected by the Iraqi community since migrating to Australia. No flowers? Really? I thought there'd be petals of some sort. Some say they feel so lost and isolated they would rather return to Iraq, where they almost certainly would be killed if their true roles with the Australian army were ever to be exposed. 3 years after fleeing violence and persecution at home, they tell of being shunned by many in their own communities because they worked for the Australian Army during the military operations in Iraq between 2003 and 2009. Upon arrival, one interpreter went to a bakery owned by an Iraqi Australian in Sydney only to be told, quote, You betrayed your country. You're not welcome here. That wouldn't happen, of course, in the United States. A total of 557 Iraqi interpreters and their families were granted Australian residency. At a recent Muslim gathering in northern Melbourne, an Iraqi-Australian explained the sentiment, quote, "Anyone who works with foreign troops are considered to me personally to be traitors. Foreign troops shouldn't be in our country. I think it's for Iraq to rebuild Iraq instead of any foreign troops." Flowers. Also from The Age, and in case you think that the worst of the foreclosure crisis and associated financial problems is over, and that it's all the fault of the borrowers, more than half of all bank employees in Australia have steered a customer towards a financial product they did not need in order to achieve performance targets set by management. That's a finding in a national survey of 3,200 banking staff by the Financial Sector Union. What a primitive country. They have unions in the financial sector, which revealed growing resentment over strong-arm sales tactics used by the big four banks. Despite soaring levels of household debt and credit card fatigue, banks are increasingly using financial incentives to motivate staff to push more loans and credit cards. Almost 90% of all bank workers now earn up to a quarter of their total remuneration in bonuses. And finally, from the same newspaper, the Hipster Hitler clothing line has cartoon images of the dead dictator dressed in skinny jeans and cardigan, alongside slogans such as "Back to the Führer," "East Side, West Side, Genocide," and "Three Reichs and You're Out." The brand's New York-based designers said they were poking fun at the Führer by depicting him as a contemptible inner urban dude. But the joke was lost on some Jewish groups in Australia who say Hitler was a monster. Now Hipster Hitler has taken slogans such as 1941, A Race Odyssey, and Death Camp for Cutie off its Melbourne-based website, which prints and sells the work of its designers, among others. The decision to censor the designs, which remain on Hipster Hitler's own website, was welcomed by the Australian B'nai B'rith. The website's co-founder, a former Australian diplomat, said the play nice guidelines of the Australian site would be adjusted to prohibit parodies of genocide. That's nice. That is playing nice. The decision to censor hipster Hitler slogans also includes "Save the Panzer." Was compared by the Australian head of the website to the satire of Mel Brooks. Hipster Hitler's creators, who identify themselves only as JC, an Australian, and APK, an Indian, said they were disappointed, but they understood the Australian website's decision. They say they'd sold about 4,000 T-shirts in the last 9 months. They said, quote, "We mock Hitler by casting him in the negative light of the much-despised contemporary figure of the hipster. We believe his ideas are not glorified, but further highlighted as weak and erroneous." Weak. They're weak ideas, ladies and gentlemen. News from outside the bubble. I've said it before on this program. I'll say it again. Joking and Hitler, Mel Brooks aside, really, 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 really don't mix. Just, but that's, you know, humor and amateurs, again, that too. And now news of AFAC. That wasn't even a runner-up for the new work for that insurance company, that version of the voice. AFAC! Yes, it's weak. I admit it. But news of AFAC coming your way right now. Missing since Sunday, Pakistani journalist Saeed Salim Shahzad has been declared dead by his employer, an Italian news agency. His body was found in southeast Islamabad. There were indications he had been tortured before his death. His disappearance just days after he published an article in Asia Times about alleged links between the Pakistani Navy and Al-Qaeda. News of AFPAC, as well as the new Iraq, billions of dollars worth of U.S.-funded reconstruction projects in Afghanistan and Iraq could fall into disrepair over the next few years because inadequate provisions have been made to pay for their ongoing operations and maintenance. Oh, maintenance, operations. This according to a bipartisan legislative commission in this country. The Commission on Wartime Contracting in Iraq and Afghanistan says it sees no indication that the Pentagon, State Department, or U.S. aid are effectively taking sustainability risks into account when devising projects or programs. If immediate steps are not taken to address sustainability issues, the commission says, the United States faces new waves of waste in Iraq and Afghanistan. One of the commission's chairmen, Christopher Shays, a former Republican congressman, said in an interview the cost of projects that cannot or will not be sustained by the Iraqi and Afghan governments, quote, will make other forms of contracting waste pale in comparison. Pale, ladies and gentlemen, in comparison. And one more story of AFPACian interest. France, not sure about the safety of Pakistan's nuclear weapons, has decided against supplying nuclear energy technology to Pakistan, according to another one of those darn WikiLeaks cables. According to a cable dated September 3, 2009, disclosed by the Pakistani newspaper Dawn, French President Sarkozy's diplomatic advisor has told U.S. diplomats the French government was, quote, not sure that the Pakistani nuclear deterrent is secure, especially with the frequent movement of nuclear weapons by the Pakistani military, unquote. I'm sure that's movement only to make them safer. Don't you think? Wouldn't you feel that way? I know I would. I'm going to make that assumption. But that's just me. I'm me. That's news of AFPAC. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news about our friend the Atom. Addy, are you too cold in here?
I'm just right.
Okay. He's just right, ladies and gentlemen. That's good. And by the way, I have to say at this moment that I've been the recipient of numerous emails from folks who either think I'm pronouncing the name of the Japanese nuclear plant correctly or conversely that I'm pronouncing it incorrectly. So rather than take a stand, I'm just going to no longer refer to it by its full name, but just refer to it as Fuk. Okay, so it's not one of the seven. No, it's not. Fuk. Japan's crippled Fuk nuclear plant is not fully rhymes with nuke, is not fully prepared for heavy rain and winds of a typhoon heading toward the country, officials admit. Tokyo Electric Power, which runs the plant, said some reactor buildings were uncovered, prompting fears a storm would carry radioactive material into the air and the sea. A typhoon was expected to hit mainland Japan this week. On the other hand, the handling of the Fuk nuke crisis was exemplary. Who said that? A preliminary report from the International Atomic Energy Agency. And could eventually show, quote, what can be achieved in responding to such extreme nuclear events, unquote. Some of the findings say the tsunami hazard for several sites were underestimated. Other findings praise Japan's extremely open stance in sharing information with the IAEA team. An open stance. Don't tell Larry Craig. There was no dissection of precise actions by the various corporate and government players before or after the tsunami. That kind of detail will be in a more detailed report coming up. The San Onofre nuclear generating station in California suffered yet another accident last weekend when a mechanical failure resulted in the release of 75 gallons of sulfuric acid. That's a nice thing. The spill was discovered last Saturday but was not deemed worth reporting to state and federal authorities until Sunday, according to a separate report. The spill occurred over 8 minutes when a piping flange struck a leak. All 75 gallons were recovered in a secondary containment. This isn't the largest sulfuric acid spill the plant has experienced. In April 2 years ago, a leak caused 1,000 gallons of sulfuric acid to overflow from a storage tank. In July last year, two different spills on the same day resulted in the release of 110 gallons of sulfuric acid. In both cases, said a San Diego City Beat reporter, the acid was allegedly contained. In February this year, San Onofre suffered another spill of another dangerous chemical, hydrazine. If you want your dangerous chemical spilled, you know where to go get it done. Seabrook, New Hampshire is the site of our next tale of the atomic miracle. The U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission inspectors reviewing the Seabrook station for its fitness to have its license extended until 2050 have noted deterioration of the concrete in below-ground-level structures at the nuclear plant. They discovered plant material conditions, including a large amount of groundwater infiltration, large amount of calcium carbonate deposits. Those are good, right? Deposits, not withdrawals. Corroded steel supports, base plates and piping, corroded anchor bolts, pooling of water, and cracking and spalling of concrete, according to the NRC report. The inspection further noted that exterior walls and one control building tunnel have random cracking and for many years have been saturated by groundwater infiltration. Opponents of the attempt to extend the operating license question the ability of the plant's owner, Next Era Energy. We're not worried about this era. To adequately monitor the effects of aging at the facility. Seabrook Station spokesperson Alan Griffin said the groundwater infiltration issues are something plant officials have been dealing with and controlling for years. We've been managing it for some time. It's an ongoing challenge for us, he says. Nothing is unsafe, he adds. All right, then. I, for one, will take the word of the plant spokesperson because he's paid to say that. The NRC considered both violations very low level because the issues were not design or qualification deficiencies, did not result in an actual loss of safety function, and were not potentially risk significant for external events. So go head on with your corrosion and groundwater infiltration. The operator of the Fouque plant said Friday more radioactive water could begin spilling into the sea later this month if there's a glitch in setting up a new decontamination system. Tokyo Electric Power also said two workers may have been exposed to radiation at more than twice the limit set by the government, the most serious case so far of exposure among hundreds of workers at the Fouque plant. Nearly 110,000 tons of highly radioactive water, enough to fill about 40 Olympic-sized swimming pools. Don't do it, though. Don't do that for the Olympics. Don't fill the pools with that. Please, don't take the use of that. I beg you, Olympic people, are stored at the plant. Tokyo Electric has pumped massive amounts of water to cool three reactors where meltdowns occurred. Managing the growing pools of radioactive water is a major challenge with the start of Japan's rainy season. The plant is running out of storage space. By sealing relevant areas, we plan to prevent contaminated water from leaking into the sea, said TEPCO. Engineers have begun installing equipment supplied by the French reactor maker Areva to decontaminate the radioactive water. But if the treatment system doesn't work, how could that happen? What are you talking about? What if? What is this if? One of the reactors could run out of space to store contaminated water as early as June 20th, and it could then spill into the sea. The same could happen to a second reactor a day later, says TEPCO. One of the things apparently they're preparing to do, according to this report, is to you can grow crops in ground that is covered with the contaminated water, and the crops will leach the radioactivity out of the water, which only then leads to the question, what do you do with the crops? Where do you store those? Well, you send them to Germany. A nuclear watchdog group in North Carolina received two letters this year from an anonymous whistleblower warning of problems with the design and regulatory approval process for the new Westinghouse AP1000. That is so much better than the AP900. I can't even begin. This is a new type of reactor that utilities are beginning or planning to build across the southeast United States. The letters contain details indicating the whistleblower has inside knowledge of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. A North Carolina watchdog group has posted the letters on the NC Warn website. Among the charges made in the letters, anticipating monetary rewards and promotions, NRC officials rigged the design approval process to confuse Congress and the NRC's own science advisors, thereby speeding it up in response to industry pressure. Design shortcomings were pushed through the approval process without full review or while ignoring industry standards. These shortcomings involve passive emergency cooling and the radiation containment structure. No biggie there. And the AP-1000 would not withstand an airplane strike similar to the attack against the World Trade Center. Deadline Watertown, New Jersey, in the shadow of the nation's oldest operating nuclear plant. Folks worry about the leaks of radioactive water at the Oyster Creek Generating Station revealed 2 years ago, shortly after the nuclear plant's operator, Exelon Corporation, won a license renewal. In April 2 years ago, Exelon discovered two leaks in underground pipes, allowing, say it with me now, tritium to enter the groundwater. Later that year, Exelon discovered yet another leak in a 6-inch aluminum pipe, says one of the locals. Ware Town Mayor Joe Lakowitz, I know tritium is a dangerous radioactive material. Because of the leaks, tritium seeped into the aquifers directly underneath the power plant. Those underground waterways eventually feed into wells that provide drinking water. Such radioactive spills are a problem nationwide. More than half of the country's 65 nuclear power plant sites have suffered significant tritium leaks or spills. Many of the leaks are the result of corroding underground pipes that have not been maintained. Tritium, of all the radioactive compounds entering groundwater, travels fastest through the soil. The commission did not order Exelon to clean up the spill at Oyster Creek, an example, some scientists claim, of the agency's failure to fully protect the public. The NRC conducted a self-analysis to determine if it was responding adequately to nuclear plant leaks. The commission's groundwater task force found that, quote, the NRC response to incidents could be enhanced to be more reliable. That's reassuring. Radioactive soil in pockets of areas near the Fuk plant have reached the same level as Chernobyl, where a dead zone remains 25 years on. Radiation from the plant has spread over 230 square miles, according to the report. The extent of contamination shows the government must move fast to avoid the same future for the area around the Fuk plant as Chernobyl. Oh, here we are. Soil can be decontaminated with chemicals or by planting crops to absorb radioactive materials. All right, what do you do with the crops? There you go. See? Got it right there. Addie, sound good to you?
I'm busting my buttons.
All right. Clean, cheap, safe, two teams. Hey, our friend the Atom. And he's just going to sit here and enjoy the rest of the broadcast today because it's raining outside.
That'll corrode me.
I know. It's a good thought. Good risk aversion on your part, I would say. Ladies and gentlemen, Katie Couric will announce this week. She's joining ABC. Having left the CBS Evening News, she will be joining ABC to run an Oprah-type afternoon talk show. But on her way out, there could be a bad day near Black Rock next here on the show.
Yes, Mr. Rather. What's your pleasure this evening?
I'll have the usual. Thanks, Richard.
That's the early bird special.
The usual.
Yes, sir.
Hello, Dan.
Sister Couric. What brings you to these precincts?
Oh, just a celebration-type drink with one of my new colleagues.
Well, you have to scoot on over, or can you set a spot?
Well,
that's the early bird special, Mr. Rather.
Yes, Richard, the usual. Thank you.
A beverage, sir.
Water's fine.
Yes, sir.
Well, now that that's over, I guess I can sit down for a minute or two.
Great.
I can see him coming in from here. So, how are you?
Finer than Hill Country Cotton, Miss Katie. And you?
So excited about my next chapter.
Oh, really? What are you reading?
In My Life.
John Lennon bio?
I'm very excited about the next chapter in my life after you know where.
Oh, I know where, all right. So, unless my sources are mad cow wrong, you're headed on over someplace with initials as simple as ABC.
Well, if your sources are all the wires and half the internet, I guess they're right. What would that be, sane cow right?
Oh, you're going to do well over there, Sister Kurik. Interesting, isn't it?
Excuse me, sir. Here you are. The early bird water.
Thanks so very much.
What's interesting, Dan?
Well, they chased me out of CBS News for being too hard and you for being too soft. I guess Brother Pelly is going to be just right.
Oh, I don't think I was too soft.
Really?
I...
What are you doing over at ABC? Documentaries?
Afternoon talk show.
Well, all right, then. Let's just put it this way. You were daytime hard, not evening hard.
Look, Dan, I think we can agree it was a rough place to work. For me, I think it was because I was a woman. I still am, last time I looked. And for you...
Oh, I'll take over this part. I think it was because I was a two-fisted hombre in a building full of one-fisted hombres.
Can I ask you something? Do you miss doing the news every night?
Tell you something, Sister Kurik, I miss it like a rodeo bull misses his bucking shoot.
I'm sorry, is that a yes or a no?
Here you go, sir. The early bird salad.
I'm getting to work with such a tight-knit little team, knit tighter than an Andean poncho. We're doing award-caliber work, even though the channel isn't award-eligible. I'm busting more shoe leather than I did in 2 decades over at West 57th Street, and...
And you're on what, channel 4002?
HDNet is up at what we call the hard end of the channel selector. I think Brother Cuban likes it that way.
That's great. Can I ask you something?
Sure.
Did they ever put gibberish in the prompter when you were there?
Sister Kurik, any given night, half of what was in the prompter was gibberish.
No, I mean, like, nonsense syllables just to... Hey, are you eating your salad without dressing?
Dressing's for the Dude Ranch Wranglers over at the network. I like my salad the way I like my women, undressed and without E. coli. No offense.
You know, I'm so used to it by now it hurts. Oh, there's my new friend. Great to see you, Dan. You look great.
Oh, thank you, Sister Kurik. You drop dead gorgeous and stay dead charming.
Thanks. Watch for me over on the soft side of the channel selector. Take care.
Here's the early bird chicken, Mr. Rather.
Richard, as always, sir. Many thanks.
baby, you're no
From CPR, Continental Public Radio, the President's Weekly Radio Address. Now, President Obama.
In the last couple of weeks, we've gotten some good news about the economy, as well as some other news. Chrysler, which we saved from bankruptcy, announced that it was paying back almost all the money it received from the federal government. That's billions of dollars, as the commercialists like to say, imported from Detroit. And just this week, my administration released new unemployment figures, and to be honest, they didn't tell a totally optimistic story. To be more honest, they told a story of an economy not experiencing a robust recovery. For even more honesty, you can go to whitehouse.gov. You know, when even one qualified American worker can't find a job, that's a tragedy. When up to one-sixth of the labor force is underutilized, that's a major drag on the country's economic growth trajectory. And, as president, it's my responsibility to do whatever I can to solve this problem. That's why my administration has passed the strongest set of financial regulatory reforms ever approved by the banking industry's own lobbyists. That's why we worked hard and fought hard to make sure that those Americans who still do have jobs can keep their employer-based health care until and unless they lose those jobs. That's why, in the wake of the recession, we encouraged the formation of good, strong, robust banking institutions with the resources to continue making home loans to responsible people who, through no fault of their own, may have no job or income. In the meantime, of course, folks in every community across America are discovering that not every job has to come with a paycheck. There's work to be done in our cities and in our rural areas, and plenty of folks are rolling up their sleeves and volunteering to roll up the sleeves of their neighbors, too. Make no mistake, this administration regards the reversal of those unemployment numbers as, like the ads used to say, job one, and maybe jobs three and four as well. Job two, of course, would have to be national security. Job five would be getting a decent shooting guard for the Bulls. But after any recession, the economists like to say that unemployment is a lagging indicator. Well, we want this time to be different, but we need your help. If you've got a small business or even a big business, there's no better time to hire than when folks are desperate for work. You can help your country and your own bottom line by hiring now, not waiting until working folks regain some bargaining power. If everyone listening to me now just hired one extra worker this week, I could spend next week worrying about Afghanistan. Thanks, and have a great weekend.
Funds for this broadcast came from a Mildred and Andrew Morkman Foundation grant for picking up pool coverage and the Emergency Scheduled Programs Fund of the Corporation for Potluck Broadcasting. This is CPR, Continental Public Radio.
Attention, attention, this is Mission Control. We switch you immediately to our Hollywood correspondent.
Hello, everybody. I'm reporting from the first party ever held in outer space. Everybody is here, and I mean everybody. Old movie stars, statues, politicians, dead people, the works. Look, isn't that Lassie? Swell party, isn't it, Lassie?
I'm having a great time. Thanks.
Thank you. Gee, what a polite animal. Uh-oh, here comes Abraham Lincoln. Hi, Abe.
Ooh, I just met Lassie.
Me too. She's a lovely dog. Thanks for being so honest. Oh, my goodness, look over there. It's the great Al Jolson.
Don't bother me now.
Why not, Al?
I'm having lunch.
So you are. Looks good, too. Well, let's move away now and change the subject. Oh, maybe I can get a word with the Statue of Liberty. Excuse me, what brings you here, ma'am?
I'm with him.
Well, I hope the both of you have a very good time. Try the cheese dip. Looking for more people to talk to? Whoop! Excuse me, sir. Are you a celebrity?
No.
I didn't think so. You don't have that certain something. Uh-oh, there's Richard Chamberlain. Hello, Dick.
Hi, nice to see you.
Nice to see you, Dick. Always a pleasure. Well, time to be leaving. Let's say goodbye to Lassie.
I talked to you once already.
Indeed you did, and we were very grateful for it. See you all next year at another Party from Outer Space.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
First of all, an apology left over from last week, but he's still suspended, so it still fits. Ed Schultz, ladies and gentlemen.
First, I want to take some time to offer an apology. On my radio show yesterday, I used vile and inappropriate language when talking about talk show host Laura Ingraham. I am deeply sorry, and I apologize. It was wrong, uncalled for, and I recognize the severity of what I said. I apologize to you, Laura, and ask for your forgiveness. It doesn't matter what the circumstances were. It doesn't matter that it was on radio and I was ad-libbing. None of that matters. None of that matters. What matters is what I said was terribly vile and not of the standards that I or any other person should adhere to. I want all of you to know tonight that I did call Laura Ingraham today and did not make contact with her, and I will apologize to her as I did in the message that I left her today. I also met with management here at MSNBC, and understanding the severity of the situation and what I said on the radio and how it reflected terribly on this company, I have offered to take myself off the air for an indefinite period of time with no pay. I want to apologize to Laura Ingraham. I want to apologize to my family, my wife. I have embarrassed my family. I have embarrassed this company. And I have been in this business since 1978, and I've made a lot of mistakes. This is the lowest of low for me. I stand before you tonight to take full responsibility for what I said and how I said it, and I am deeply sorry.
You know, I think he's sorry. He called her a slut. George Allen is really sorry about the macaca thing 5 years after he threw the slur at a Democratic tracker during the 2006 Senate campaign in Virginia. Allen offered a long and emotional apology to a small crowd at a recent faith and family conference this week. During our last campaign, I should never have singled out that young man working for my opponent, calling him a name, says Allen. He was just doing his job. I was wrong to do that to him and diverted our campaign away from the real issues that families care about. Speaking of families, my family had to endure a lot of taunts and insults because of my mistake, and I never want to have them go through something like that again. Unquote. George Allen. But wait, there's more. Former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich said the following during testimony this week at his federal corruption retrial.
Sorry.
I apologize to the taxpayers, he said, telling jurors he shouldn't have had gubernatorial staff research top jobs he was interested in. On the tapes that the jurors heard, I'd like to apologize to her, he said about Carol Marin, a well-known Chicago journalist whom he curses in an FBI wiretap recording. And now I owe the Russians an apology, Blagojevich said on the stand after his defense referred to an FBI recording where he is heard spewing a profanity about Russia. Two people were killed and 26 wounded in twin suicide attacks in the Afghan city of Herat this week, including at a compound where an Italian-led reconstruction team is based. and foreign forces in Afghanistan apologized for the deaths of 9 Afghan civilians. That's never happened before. Men's magazine FHM, you know, it's a lad mag, has been forced into making an apology after including androgynous male model Andrei Pezhik in its annual 100 Sexiest Women in the World, only to brand him a thing on its website. And that's enough of that. Dateline Kingston, New York, one of the city's landmark churches, has apologized for centuries of racism within the congregation. Quote, we acknowledge with deep regret our history of dehumanizing racism that allowed for the enslavement and subsequent segregation of our sisters and brothers of African descent, wrote the Reverend Kenneth Walsh of the Uptown Old Dutch Church. Dateline Bishkek, Kyrgyzstan. Never said that before. Former Kyrgyz Interior Minister Bolat Shur this week apologized to the country for his role in not preventing the deadly clashes between the Kyrgyz and ethnic Uzbeks in southern Kyrgyzstan last year. He also told Parliament he's giving up the deputy mandate and relinquishing his military rank of lieutenant general. That is sorry. Famed British hairstylist. Never thought I'd say those words. James Brown, not the one you feel better than, has apologized to television presenter and Theater Academy founder Ben Douglas. These are people we've never heard of, right? Forget it. Donald H. Shulman, the commissioner of the Internal Revenue Service, apologized to 3 identity theft victims who said they were treated rudely by IRS employees. Shulman told a House hearing on identity theft his employees need to walk in taxpayer shoes. Give me your shoes. Shulman, however, insisted the IRS takes identity theft seriously and has stepped up prevention. The commissioner met with the 3 victims before they testified at the hearing. The witnesses said they felt like they were victimized twice, once by thieves and then by IRS employees who were supposed to assist them. But now he's sorry. In a statement issued Friday by Sony Pictures Entertainment, the company confirmed it was hacked by Louise Sec, a hacking organization, this week, and apologized for any inconvenience caused. The company confirmed it had been the victim of a cyber attack. We deeply regret and apologize for any inconvenience caused to customers by this cyber crime. The statement comes in the wake of claims made on Thursday by the hacker group Louise Sec, saying it had infiltrated Sony's website and gained access to information such as email addresses, passwords, home addresses, and dates of birth for more than 1 million user accounts, which it said every bit of data we took wasn't encrypted. Sony stored over 1 million passwords of its customers in plain text, which means it's just a matter of taking it. This is disgraceful and insecure. They were asking for it, unquote. And confectionery brand Cadbury has apologized to Naomi Campbell after complaints that a commercial or an advertisement comparing the supermodel to one of its chocolate bars was racist. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Now
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, and it'd be just like not letting groundwater infiltrate if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. The email address for this broadcast and the playlist of the music heard here on always available at harryshearer.com. A sad farewell to Andrew Gold. This program is on Twitter at The Harry Shearer. Information about The Big Uneasy available at TheBigUneasy.com. And our London friends, I know some folks listen to this program over there. Skip listening to the show next week. Come see Judith Owen at the Meunier Chocolate Factory in London at 6:30. Next Sunday night. You'll be glad you did, because you'll hear me screwing around on bass as well. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from New Orleans.